The fifth chapter of Hilchos Eidus, the Laws of Testimony. This perek contains 9 halachas dealing primarily with the concept of one witness and his status as a witness in a court case. Perek Chamishi, the fifth chapter, halacha Aleph. Ein chet chin din min hadinin al pi eid echad. One cannot decide any single law according to the testimony of one witness, laid in emomines for laid in nefashes, whether it involves a monetary case or din in nefashes, a capital case where the punishment could be death. Shenemar, we know this because it says in Chumash, in Devarim, Perek Yutes, Posek Tezvav, Lo Yokum Eid Echot Be'ish, Lochol Oveinu Lochol Chatos. One witness is insufficient for any sort of sin or transgression. This is in fact a primary differentiation between the Jewish law of testimony and the case in non-Jewish courts, where one witness is sufficient, whereas in Jewish law, 2 witnesses are necessary, even if the case only involves money. And the Rambam points out from this that it says, Lo yokum eit echad be'ish, that one witness is insufficient to make a full judgment. However, mi pia shmua lomadnu, we learned, however, by the oral tradition from Mount Sinai, shakom hulishvua, that he can, his testimony can be counted to make the person take an oath. Kamo shebiyarnu behilchas tayin, as we explained previously in the laws of tayin v'nitin, of claims and counterclaims in court. If, for example, 2 witnesses would testify that Reuben owed money to Shimon, Reuben would have to pay. If, however, 1 witness testified that Reuben owed money to Shimon, then Reuben would have to take an oath, a shvua de'araisa, to deny the testimony of this one witness. Lo yokum, in other words, means that one witness is insufficient for a total judgment, but for enough credulence that we should force the defendant to take an oath, that is sufficient to have one witness. Halacha Beis.
There are 2 places where the Torah commands us to believe even one witness. The first case is Beseita, in the case of a woman who has been accused of adultery, a suspected adulteress. In order to make it that she should not have to drink literally the bitter waters. The law of Beseita is that if a man suspects his wife, of having an affair with another man, he warns her that she shall not go into a concealed place with this man. Should there be 2 witnesses that she did go into a concealed place with him, then she becomes a Saita, and as explained in Chumash Bamidbar, she is forced to drink waters after the whole description is that Rambam gave earlier in Hilchos Saita, of the waters she drinks after the letters of the cloth, the parchment, have been erased into the water containing Hashem's name. However, this is only if she has been suspected of adultery. Should we know and have witnesses, if she had relations with this man, then we do not make her drink the water. Then she has the law of any other case of an adulterous woman. This is not a Saita. We learn that even if there is only 1 witness that actually witnessed the relations between this man and this married woman, this is enough that she should not drink the water. The waters are only to determine whether she had the affair or not if there were no witnesses whatsoever. A second exception to the rule, uva egla arufa shaloi tayarev. In the case of an egla arufa, that if we have found a murdered person and are unaware who the murderer was, then the Torah prescribes that one must bring a calf there, and the calf's neck is broken with a hatchet. Its head is chopped with a hatchet from the back, and an atonement ceremony takes place. However, in the case where there is 1 witness who is aware who the murderer is, it might not be enough to punish the murderer, but it is enough that one does not carry through the ceremony of Egla Rufa. Kamosha Biyarno is explained there previously in Hilchos Rotzeach. The Kame Divrayim Be'edus Isha, and so to another exception by rabbinic law in testimony to allow a woman to be married. Sheyad La Shameis Baila, that if one person testifies that her husband has died, then she is no longer considered an aguna. Because if a woman's husband is lost and there is no testimony as to his death, we worry that perhaps her husband is still alive, and therefore she is not allowed to remarry because it would be considered a case of adultery. She is still married to her first husband. However, our sages established that even 1 witness that her husband has died shall be sufficient to allow her to remarry. Halacha Gimel. B'chol makom she'ed echad mayil, in any case where one witness is deemed to be sufficient, as we mentioned in the previous halacha, ishu uposul kamay kein me'idim. So too, a woman who is normally invalid to testify, or another person who is invalid for another reason, by rabbinic law at least, from testifying, such as a person that did certain types of avedas, as we mentioned previously in these halachas, is kosher in such a case. The commentaries explain, and the Rambam mentioned earlier in Hilchus Gerush and Perek Yud Beis Halacha Yud Zayin, that if somebody is posel midiraisa, for example, a proven thief, he is invalid even when only one witness is learned. But short of that, even one witness is sufficient for these cases, even should it be an Isha posel. Chutz me'ed echel shel shavua, except as far as the law we mentioned at the end of Halacha Aleph, that the testimony of one witness shall make the defendant take an oath. Shein mechayv in shavua ele be'edus kosher, haroy litzarefim acher, v'yishayv ze'anish b'momen al piv. Because one witness can only make another one take an oath, should it be totally kosher testimony that would be fit to join with another kosher witness, and thereby make the person pay money. As the Gemara says, in any case where two people can make him pay, one witness will make him take an oath. But therefore, the limitation is placed that the one must be just like the two. Just as the two to make him pay must be kosher witnesses, so to the one to make him take an oath must be a kosher witness. Although many versions of the Rambam continue the next statement as part of the previous halacha, the earlier prince of the Rambam, and so too, the Ksav Yad Teiman, starts here a new halacha, as it starts a new topic, which takes us through the rest of Halacha Gimel, Halacha Dalet, Hey, Vav, and Zayin. What happens should there be many witnesses, and among them was one witness at least, who was invalid? Is the whole testimony looked at one testimony, and therefore, since one is invalid, all of the witnesses are invalid? Or do we separate the one invalid witness from the rest, and count the testimony of the other ones? And the Rambam starts off by quoting the pasuk, Al pi shnayim edim, al pi shleisha edim, that according to two witnesses, or three witnesses, and as the pasuk continues, that according to this, the testimony is accepted. The question asked in the Gemara is if two witnesses are sufficient. Why does it have to say either two or three? So the Rambam answers, "Lasei shleisha keshnayim," that we treat three witnesses as we treat two witnesses. How so? Ma shnayim nimsa echem mehem karav apostle. Just as in the case of two witnesses, that if you find one of them is a relative, or is otherwise invalid to testify, batla ha'edus, the testimony is nullified, av shleisha. So too in the case of three, v'hu adin lameya, and so too for 100 witnesses, nimsa echad mehem karav apostle batla ha'edus. Should you find even one of the 100, or the three, who is a relative or otherwise invalid to testify, the entire testimony of all 100 is invalidated. Bein bedinim omenes, bein bedinim nefashes. Whether it's a monetary case or a capital case, regardless of what the subject of the dispute is, should even one of these witnesses be invalid, the entire testimony is thrown out. Halacha dalet, however, b'med dvorim amurim, when does this apply? When we throw out the entire testimony of all of these witnesses, if even one is invalid, bizman shenis kavnu kulam lahoid, only if all of these witnesses to the event had intention to give testimony. In other words, at the time they witnessed the act taking place, they had in mind that they were going to testify. They didn't just see it in passing, they saw it as witnesses. Aval im leinis kavnu kulam lahoid, but if not all of them had in mind, did not have intention to testify, Ma yasu shnei achim b'chlal ha'am? What should you do if there are two brothers in a crowd? V'ro ha'am kishahorek zeh, and the whole crowd saw that a person killed another. Or that one person injured another. Or grabbed something away from the other. If we take this to its logical conclusion, that if one witness is related to another, then the entire testimony is invalid, then a person could always do something in a crowd and hope to get away with it, because certainly there must be two brothers in the crowd who are related to each other, or somebody that is invalid to testify, possible aides in the crowd. And therefore, the testimony of the entire crowd will be thrown out, since at least one person was invalid. Therefore, what we do is determine that only those who were niskavna lahayid, who had in mind to testify, that they must be all kosher. How do you determine this? Halacha hei, the ketzad beikin es hadavar. How do you determine this? Kesh yavo lebezdin edi merubin, when many witnesses come to court, kat achas eimer lahem. Or some versions of the Rambam say, Eimrim lahem. The first group, the court says to them, Kesh reisim ze shahara, gachavala. When you saw this person kill or injure, lahayid basem olireis. Did you come in order to be able to give testimony later, or did you simply come to see what was going on? Kol mishaimer lei lahayid alav, el olireis mahadavar, ubechlal ha'am basi. Anyone that says that I didn't come to testify, I merely came to see what was going on, and I was just standing in a group of people, this person did not come to testify. Therefore, mafrishin eisei, we separate him and put him on the side. Anyone that says that I only came there in order to testify and to exactly see what was going on, we separate him to the other side. So, if we find in the second group, among those that had intention to testify, a relative or someone invalid to testify, the testimony of all of them, of the entire group, is invalidated. In other words, of the first group who did not intend to testify, merely came to see, we do not care whether there was someone there who was a Karov apostle. We only look at the second group who had in mind to testify. And should there be one Karov apostle there, then their entire testimony is invalidated. However, the Rambam now says, do not think, therefore, in order to be a valid witness, he must have in mind to be a witness at the time of the act. When is it that we rely solely on the second group and completely ignore the first group who did not have intention to testify, Keshahoyu Behen Karov Apostle, when there was in that first group somebody who was a relative or was otherwise invalid to testify? In that case, we disregard this first group who did not have in mind to testify, and we validate the testimony of the second group who had in mind to testify. Avalim Kulim Ksheirim. However, if all of them are kosher, all of them are valid to testify, we treat the one who had in mind to testify or did not have in mind to testify, we treat them the same. Since they all saw the event take place and exactly had in mind what happened, and so too there was hasra, a warning to the person who was about to do the act, as the case is in capital cases, that before putting the person to death, there must be hasra, somebody warning him to ensure that he is doing it intentionally. Since all of these things are present, chaytchen hadin al piv, we make a legal judgment based according to his testimony, even though he did not have in mind specifically to see the event for the sake of testifying. Bein b'din imamanes, bein b'din nefashes. Regardless of whether it's a monetary or a capital case, we still listen to the witness who only came to see. We only case we disregard his testimony should his relationship or his psul to testify, should it ruin the rest of the testimony. Halacha Vav. In the next halacha, the Rambam speaks about the same idea of one witness who is Karav apostle in the case of the signatures on a document. Shtar shahayu eid of merubin, a document which had many witnesses signed on it. The nimsa echemem karav apostle. We find one of the witnesses who signed is related or invalid to testify, meaning he is related to one of the people who were involved in the transaction. Oy shahayu bem shnaim karevim zelozeh, or there were two witnesses who were related to each other. Bahare ein ha'edim kayomin kadei lishaleisam. And the witnesses are no longer present in order to ask them whether they were actually signed, counted as witnesses or not. As the Rambam will explain, sometimes people sign on a document simply to fill up the space, in order that it should have many signatures, but weren't really there to be witnesses. And we could ask them, did they have in mind to be witnesses, or were they merely filling up the space? Should they be not present? In order to ask them, what do we do? So, im yesham edus berura shakulam yosh v'lachtem, shari niskavnu lahoid harei zebakl. Should there be clear testimony that all of them, in other words, testimony about the witnesses, that there is clear testimony that all of them came to sign on the document for the sake of validating it as witnesses, then therefore everyone signed there had in mind to testify, and therefore the document is invalidated. Beim lav, however, if we don't have such testimony, to skayim ha'edus peshat, we validate the testimony using the rest of the witnesses. We disregard the one who is a relative or invalid to testify, and validate it with the rest of the witnesses. V'lama makayman eidus b'shar. And why is it that we validate the testimony with the remaining witnesses? Shouldn't we automatically assume that all of them intended to testify? Since they signed in the document, why did they sign in the document if they did not intend to testify? Because it's possible that first the kosher, the valid witnesses signed. However, they signed a little bit further down in the document. And they left room for a person who was greater than them, who deserves more respect, an older person or something of the sort, to let them sign. Let him sign his name first. And along came this relative or this person who was puzzled and signed without anybody knowing about it. And therefore the document had all of its space filled up. And since it's common that the people should leave a space for someone who was a godel, it's always possible that someone went and put their signature in. Since this is a plausible possibility, therefore, we do not invalidate the document until we have clear testimony that all of the signatures, including the Kodav Apostle, had their names put there for the sake of testimony. And Allah Zayin, Afal Pisha Eicha Chosu Mitchila Bashtar, Hu Apostle Arei Ashtar Kosha. Even if the witness who signed first on the document is possible, still the document is valid. And as we explained in the end of Allah Havav, that since one would leave a place for a gadol to sign, it would make sense you would leave the first place to sign. Therefore, even if the posel of the witness, or the kodav, is the first one signed in the document, it's nevertheless a valid document. In the beginning of Hilchas Eidus, the Rambam listed 8 commandments out of the 613 which are associated with Hilchas Eidus. Earlier in this perek, we learned one of these 8 commandments, that one cannot establish a valid testimony based on only one witness. And now the Rambam explains another one, that a witness in a capital case may not give his opinion or an explanation which shall affect the status of his testimony. Halacha Ches. Kol Eid Shehid B'din Nefoshes. Any witness in a capital case is not allowed to give any ruling or guidance in the law of this person who was being regarding the person that was killed. In other words, regarding this judgment, what should happen to the murderer? He should not say anything which shall be either in his advantage to acquit the murderer or to have him declared guilty. He merely says his testimony and that's all. And if the witness says, but if after giving his testimony, the witness says that I can say something favorable for this murderer, we quiet him down. We tell him not to say anything further. He is forbidden from saying anything. Shenemar. And we know this because it says in Chumash Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Hey, Pasuk Lamed, Veit Echod Lo Ya'aneh B'Nefesh Lamus. Literally, one witness shall not answer, shall not say anything regarding a person to be put to death. And we learn bein lizchus, bein lecheva. This applies whether it is favorable testimony, a favorable statement, or disfavorable statement. It seems from looking at the pasuk, however, that he is only forbidden for saying anything which is to the disadvantage of the defendant. As the pasuk says, ve'edachad lo ya'aneh b'nefesh lamus, that he is not allowed to say anything lamus, which apparently means to put him to death. How does the Rambam learn that this means bein lezchus, bein lecheva, whether it is for to his disadvantage or even to acquit the murderer? What does it mean then that it says in order to put him to death? So the Rambam explains the word lamus over here doesn't mean to put him to death. It means lamus in a capital case, in a case which involves death, kolemer, which means to say, eid shehid benefesh lamus, a witness who testified to put someone to death, benefesh lamus, in a capital case, lo yane dover eloyoid v'yishtek, should not explain anything, rather just give his testimony and then be silent. In other words, the verse is translated, ve'erechav lo yane, that one witness should not say anything, benefesh lamus, in a case where someone could be put to death, in a capital case. Why is there this prohibition? After all, to give the person a chayva, to find him guilty, this we can understand that should not be done. Because we look to find any schus possible not to kill somebody. But why should we not allow him to say something which should acquit the murderer? The commentaries say that this is not a mere chok, simply because Zeres HaKosov, the Pasuk, says so that there is this law. Rather, they explain that the witness, after giving his testimony to find him guilty of death, might have regret on this testimony. He might want to change his mind. After all, as we explained in previous Prakim, there's the law of Hazama. If he is If Edim Zemimim come along and say that he is not qualified to testify in this case, because at the time he says he witnessed this action, he was somewhere else, then he himself, this witness, will be put to death. So perhaps he is getting cold feet and is trying to back out of his testimony, and saying therefore the person should not be put to death. Since we want to avoid such a situation, we do not listen to him to avoid any other influences on his testimony, and he is not allowed to say anything bein l'schus, bein l'chayva. This, however, is all in capital cases. In monetary cases, however, he is allowed to say something whether it will be favorable or disfavorable. He is not, however, allowed to be counted among the judges, and he may not become a judge. Because a witness cannot become a judge even in monetary cases. The principles ain aid nasidayin. As here too, the explanation is given that since, in order for testimony to be valid, it must be edus sheyachol lahazima, that it would be possible to be zeimim, the witness. Over here, if he's going to become the dayin, the judge, he's never going to accept hazama on himself. He can't accept such hazama. He knows that he was there. How could he listen to other witnesses? Therefore, since it's with testimony shein achol yachol lahazima, he cannot become a dayin. Others explain the reason for that law of Ein Eid Nasidayin, that since the aid has seen it with his own eyes, he will be unable to learn any halachic leniencies in this case. That since Riyah, sight, has such a powerful effect on a person's perception, no matter what explanation there might be to acquit the person, since he saw it happen, he will be inclined to judge according to his sight, and therefore he is not sufficiently removed from the situation to be counted as a judge. And the final halach of the perek, halach tes. When does this apply that ain aid, nas a dayin? A witness cannot be used as a judge. That in a matter which you need testimony by Torah law, and you also need judges for this matter by Torah law. But should it be a case where testimony or judges are required only by rabbinic decree, aid, nas a dayin, a witness is valid to act as a judge. Ketzar, how is this? Echa chahevi haget. For example, if a person brought a get, a writ of divorce, from Eretz Yisrael to outside the land of Israel, and the law is that this get must be validated to ensure it has been written lishma, for the sake of this person, and for the sake of the wife, and for the sake of Gerishin, and so on. And therefore, he must testify, va'omar b'fane nechtav v'fane nechtam, that this was written and signed in my presence. So they are witnesses. Excuse me, this is a witness who is testifying as to the validity of the get. So he's a witness. In order to give over the get to the woman, you need a bezdin of three. You need three judges. But in this case, eid nasadayan, who shnayim nesnin eisala, him, with, together with two other people, can have the get being given to her. In other words, he can be both the witness and the instrument of giving the get to her, as well as the judge, judging that the divorce is valid. And it is as if she has taken it, she has taken this get from a bezdin, since he counts as part of the bezdin. And the reason is, since this his testimony is only required by rabbinic decree, it is only rabbinic requirement to make a kiyum, a validation of this get, to that he should say, in the case of a rabbinic law, aid nasadai, and the witness can become a judge. So to any other case where the testimony is required only by rabbinic decree, aid nasadai.